Tonight, we have Nicoletta. We're very excited. And she'll be talking about step 12. So take it away.
Thank you. Thanks so much. Hi, guys. My name is Nicoletta. I'm an alcoholic. Grateful to be back. Nervous. Thanks for inviting me back. I decided step 12, or it was decided for me. I don't really know what happened, but it was like a natural order because I presented on steps 10 and 11 a few weeks back. So it's a nice way to wrap up. And then I was like, I mean, this is like the most magical thing to talk about. I mean, like, how do I talk about step 12? There's like so many layers to step 12. There's so much experience in the last, you know, 15 and a half years of my sobriety. There is so much that the book talks about step 12, not only in working with others, but, you know, step 12 is in two parts, really. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we carry this message. So what's the message that I carry? I carry the message of the spiritual awakening. And then the second part is that I live it. I live that. I am that message. Carrying the message is who I be. You know, that's the ultimate goal. And that in itself is attractive. That's what's attractive. That's the attraction rather than promotion. And I was like, you know, I don't want to lecture and just read this, like, never-ending, chapter on working with others that goes into a lot of details, which is so important, but we can cover it in 45 minutes to 60 minutes. And I was like, I want to share with you my experience, and my mind went right into Bill Wilson's experience in the hospital. Bill Wilson has a spiritual, profound spiritual awakening in the hospital. He's like a couple of days sober, maybe 3 days sober. It's like December 14, back in the day. You know, it's like his third stint, I think, in the hospital. And he has this experience, and the first thought that goes through his mind is how he can share that with others. So I know that when we are in a position of wanting to be of service, that's a byproduct of a spiritual awakening. It's not that I am being of service in order to have the awakening. It's that the awakening has already happened. My heart's already been opened. My heart's already been opened, and a byproduct of that is that I want to connect with you. And on top of that, I'm uniquely qualified to connect with you as alcoholics because I'm an alcoholic and I understand the powerlessness and the desperation that you went through. We speak the same language, and how could I not want to share that there's a way out of that? That's like a natural movement that happens for us. It's got nothing to do with my mind. It has nothing to do with how I envision my life to be or what I want to do with my spare time and how I want to plan my life. And yet it is there. And if I listen to that movement and that impulse to be there for others, to connect to others, to carry this message of awakening, to create a safe space of understanding and to walk shoulder to shoulder with someone who's in a position where I've been at some point, it's incredibly fulfilling. It's incredibly empowering. And lack of power is my dilemma. And here I am experiencing this incredible power, this incredible freedom to go where I want to go, to be a free-range alcoholic. I mean, just, you know what I mean? I was locked down for the first 4 months of my sobriety, so I was safe because I was locked up, right? And as soon as I was not locked up, I met a woman. She was put in front of me. Her name is Lena. She's my sponsor. She's my sponsor to this day. So I am one very lucky, lucky, grateful alcoholic. I have a very lucky story to have met a woman in very early recovery in the first 3 days of landing in a sober house in New Jersey from lockdown treatment that told me the truth. And there was something about her eyes. She was magnetic. She was incredibly attractive. She aroused curiosity in me. She had a confidence and humility in her demeanor that I couldn't, like, my brain was like short-circuiting on how could you be humble and confident at the same time. Like, I would see this in, like, spiritual leaders on TV and in, like, movies. But this was, like, I didn't interact with people who had this demeanor of, like, absolute freedom. And I could see it in their eyes. Like, something in me registered that this woman was free. She had something that I didn't think was attainable, right? And thankfully, she was willing to tell me the truth about how much trouble I was in and how sick I was, if I was a real alcoholic. And she qualified me as one. That there was no other way than for us to go through this big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and have an experience with the 12 steps that have proven successful for many alcoholics, most alcoholics, you know. And thankfully, the willingness and the surrender was present for me to take this radical action that didn't make sense to me, that I didn't necessarily agree with, that I didn't necessarily like, that I didn't comprehend, because I trusted her. I didn't trust the book or understand the book. I trusted her. She carried herself. She was the message. She was transmitting the message to me sometimes without talking. That is the power of carrying a message. This is what I see as the ultimate 12th step, is that my life is a message. My life and how I carry myself is a message. And it can create a safe space for people to come into that place and feel safe and vulnerable enough to share where they're at. That's the message she carried to me. And, you know, the book talks a lot about how selfish we are. and I guess if that's my problem, then selflessness is my solution, which is not on the top of my agenda when I'm thinking. You know, I'd rather, like, binge watch Netflix, in all honesty, you know, like. But... on page 18, I'm just going to go all over the place. I picked 10 and 11 when I was asked to speak because they're like one page that I needed to read. And then I was like, damn, this is a challenge. I don't know how to do this. But I chose to read to you a paragraph on page 18 on the bottom. But the ex-problem drinker who has found this solution, who is properly armed with facts about himself, can generally win the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. Until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. That the man who's making the approach has had the same difficulty, that I'm qualified as an alcoholic, I speak the language, I understand what it's like to drink when you don't want to drink. That he obviously knows what he's talking about, that I've had the experience with this work. That his whole deportment or behavior, the way he presents himself, shouts at the new prospect that he's a man with a real answer. That he has no attitude of holier than thou, nothing whatever except the sincere desire to be helpful. That there are no fees to pay, no access to grind, no people to please, no lectures to be endured. These are the conditions we found most effective. After such an approach, many take up their beds and walk again. I love that paragraph because that is like the ideal of a sponsor. It tells me what a sponsor looks like for me, looking for one, or for me being one, right? And I need to check myself with what it says here, that there's no lectures to endure, no access to grind, no fees to pay. Fees could be emotional in nature. They don't need to be financial necessarily. I can't even imagine somebody charging for a fifth step. Oh, my God. I'm sure it's been done. We're in Alcoholics Anonymous, but, you know... but that there's no attitude of holier than thou, you know, that we can sometimes find with people that have had some time and have had some experience, and I need to be really careful with that. And that there is only a sincere desire to be helpful. That needs to be my prayer. That needs to be the way I move. That I just want to be helpful. I just want to be helpful. And it's funny, like when I align with God's will, there's no other way to move because your pain, I feel it. When I see suffering, I feel it. I connect to that. I connect to others. I am connected to the world around me. That's what makes me alive. On page 20, only on page 20, I mean, we're in the beginning of the book here. There's a solution. And on page 20, they throw this sentence that's like hard to swallow. Our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depend upon our constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. Not their wants, their needs. That's a very powerful statement. It's a really, really powerful statement. And it's warning me that my life depends on it. my life depends on this. Do I believe that? That's a question. That's a question when I read that sentence. Do I believe that? So then we go into Working with Others chapter. I wanna read some stuff from Working with Others because this is a big book workshop, and I love the big book. And big book says it better than me, except I have an accent. So there's one thing I got going for me. So, but you know, the chapter is named Working with Others. You know, it doesn't say working with alcoholics. So that sense of service or a service heart, because this is a service path, it's a way I move, right? And with an understanding that I'm uniquely qualified to help alcoholics because I'm an alcoholic, right? I'm uniquely qualified to help somebody in that sense. And there are directions and instructions on how I make that approach and how I show up for them and what I talk about. I mean, it tells me exactly what to do. Tells me exactly what to do, but we can take that further, that sense of service starts translating into our jobs, our co-workers, our family members that need our support, our help, or anywhere else that I feel that I can meet a need. Anywhere that I feel that I can meet a need or be a part of a solution to minimize suffering, disconnection, agony, pain. So it says, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. That's another... I mean, can these statements get any stronger than this? Like, that's a strong statement. It is their own experience that I'm going to stay sober if I do intensive work with other alcoholics. Intensive doesn't mean drive them to a meeting. That's not what intensive means to me. Intensive means to me that I'm willing to meet with them every single week for a couple of hours and read this book and take them through the work. That seems a little more intensive to me. That I'm willing to guide them through this work. Not like call me once a month, we'll meet when we meet, I'll see you when I see you, because any moment now you can die from active alcoholism. You have no time. You're on borrowed time, actually. And I would understand that. I would understand that. Right? So I think that 12th step, energetically speaking, is about availability. It's like making myself available. Making myself available is a huge, huge thing about step 12 and about service. It's availability. I don't need to make myself available to 20 people. But the one that comes my way, or that the one that God puts in front of me, if there's no sufficient reason that's not based in self for me not to work with them, then I need to look at that. I need to take a look at that. You know? That I can't maybe give a couple of hours of my time every week to somebody who's suffering that I can bring through this work or through the book. Right? What is my experience? I have sponsored from the... I met Lena, we went through the work, at 9 months sober I was making amends. She said, you're ready for sponsorship. Literally the first few amends I made. I didn't finish the amends, we were still working on 10, 11. She said, you're ready to sponsor. God will put somebody in front of you. You just make yourself available to that. And since that day, 15 years ago, somebody walked into my life and they've never stopped coming. They have never stopped coming. I don't choose them, pick them. I don't go to 70 million meetings a week in order for that to happen. I don't think I've ever even raised my hand that I'm available for sponsorship. They just keep coming. They keep coming. They call me. I sponsor women from other states that I've never met. Right? God makes that possible. God makes the connection. What is my responsibility to make myself available? There's a freshness to that. There's a freshness and a curiosity and an excitement about that. You know? And as a result of that, by the way, it's my most important relationships in my life. My best friends are women that I have taken through the work, and that has morphed into we trudging along side by side, seeking God. Some of the greatest, they have saved my life at some of the most toughest times in my life. They have kept me accountable to my recovery. They have kept me accountable to not being a hypocrite and telling them to do certain things if I wasn't doing them. Because the best way to learn is to teach and to put yourself in a position of that. So I can tell you that me falling in love with the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous happened as I was taking women through the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I kept seeing new things and fresh things and things I didn't see before and things that I didn't experience in earlier recovery, and that just and it, there was a deeper relationship with the book and a deeper understanding of the book. Like, I don't have to go through a million times a fourth step if I'm consistently taking somebody through the work, because every time I'm taking them through the work, I'm kind of like in self-reflection, taking myself through the work. It's like a checkpoint. So that has been the one constant energy flow, so to speak, of this giving. I put myself in a position of giving, and I receive. The byproduct is I receive. I don't put myself in a position of giving in order to receive. I bawled like a little kid to my sponsor 10 days ago. I had a car accident. My car got towed. As a result of service or that availability or the way that I have carried myself or the way in my life, whatever the case is, or maybe my lucky star, two angels show up, like take, you know, call up junkyards, order parts, fix my car. And the, like everything was done. Like I didn't move a finger. And I'm like, I'm bawling to my sponsor, like, everything I have is because of service. Like a little kid. And it was true. Like, I wasn't of service in order to receive that. But, like, I keep getting taken care of throughout my recovery. And I can totally connect it to that gratitude of others that... think, and you know, I didn't save that life. I didn't, they say that, I know I didn't, and I need to like humble myself when I hear stuff like that, because it wasn't me, it was God. God connected us, you know, you helped me as much as I helped you, if not even more. Like, what a great opportunity for both of us. And you get to give that to somebody else, but we all get to benefit from that. We get to benefit from that, and we get to benefit from this open heart. I didn't think I was going to have anything to say, and I read like one sentence of this chapter. It works when other activities fail. There's energy there. There's like something gets awoken, right? Something gets awoken from that exchange. It's like I can't tell you what an orange tastes like. You got to taste it yourself. Like, this cannot be translated intellectually. This needs to be an experience. And yes, I was nervous to do it, and I didn't think I had anything to say, and I didn't think I could do it like my sponsor did it for me, and I didn't know that I would have the answers when they asked questions about directions, about the fourth step, and about the fifth step, and my demeanor at the fifth step, and what if they ask a question on six and seven, and the spiritual principles of 12 steps taught me you just show up, you just keep showing up, you tell the truth, if the truth is I don't know. If the truth is I don't know, then you say that. And you be as human as you can be in this exchange, offering only the experience of what you have gone through and what that was like for you. I had this idea that I had to give them the perfect answer, and I realized that the perfect answer was like, I had no idea how to do this fourth step when my sponsor first gave it to me. I was completely confused, and I thought it was about therapy. And then they would like relate, and then I could share how I got through that. And what it actually became, and how it morphed into seeking truth, or taking away the untruth, right? All I had to do was trust that it was sufficient to show up with my experience, and to trust for whatever reason that they showed up in my life, and that they struggled in my life, and that they never called back in my life, and that they achieved a lot in my life, and neither any of those had nothing to do with me. Because I didn't have the power. Because I'm clear that I don't have the power to get myself sober. How could I have the power to get you sober? I could just point you in the right direction. I can tell you what worked for me. I can be there for you. I can create a safe space where you can come to, an unconditional space where there's no agendas. Right? And I can just tell you that there's magic here, and I want to take you through this work. So when we meet, I just want to read this work to you, and maybe something's going to happen magical for you that's happened for me. But it's not up to me. That's not up to me. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. What message? What's the message? Carry this message. What's that message that I carry? The message of spiritual awakening. That's the message that I need to be carrying. How I am aware of the presence of God in my life. How did I get to a place of knowing there's a God personal in my life? How I trust life. How did I go from not trusting life to trusting life, regardless of what's happening? You can help when no one else can. Right? That's the unique ability that I can't forget. So sometimes, you know, like I might excuse that service is service on all levels, and absolutely it is, and it's got its like value. I mean, there's so many service paths. AA is not the only service path. We read in history books, in TVs, in documentaries, in biographies, people who have found this way of life, a way of life that has been incredibly fulfilling and inspiring and has had many benefits and byproducts of as a result of that, right? But I am uniquely qualified. I am uniquely qualified. My sister couldn't carry the message to me. My mom couldn't carry the message to me. My dad could only carry the active alcoholism message to me. So he wasn't there yet, you know? But a stranger alcoholic knew exactly the fear that I was experiencing internally. And she said, the first time I met you, Nicoletta, all I saw was fear in your eyes. What I saw in her eyes was something incredibly free. I didn't know that there was freedom, but I found it very curious and interesting. It was incredibly attractive. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Right? If we speak the same language, then there's that bond of identification that I read about on page 18, ideal of a sponsor. Right? So I need to qualify like an alcoholic to make sure that we have experienced the element of powerlessness. It's incredibly important in order for me to, I can't build this house on, you know, sand or like on something like that's not going to hold, right? That desperation of wanting to stop and not being able to stop, not knowing how not to pick up a drink. That's the identification. I have had women that I have encountered that I couldn't qualify. That doesn't mean that they weren't powerless over something else, or that something else brought them into the rooms. But there was no zest, no willingness, no ability to really get into the work, because they were able to, you know, put the plug in the jug, come home to a half a bottle of wine every day. They just decided to no longer drink, so they no longer drank. Somebody recommended for them to go to some meetings and stuff like that. And then as we got to know each other, it was clear that there was some other stuff that was going on. And that's okay too. That was another learning experience for me. Another learning experience for me was to listen to my gut. Was to listen to my gut and to say my truth while leaving the door open at all times and making myself available. But I need to identify on the powerlessness deal. I have to be sure that they're an alcoholic. I don't need to label them as one, but I also want to like make sure that we speak the same language. Because when the fourth step comes around, and when the ninth step comes around, and when prayer meditation comes around, if there hasn't been this recognition of step one, truth, there's not going to be willingness. It's just not going to be there. I've seen it over and over and over again. And regardless of that, I'm true to the experience of whoever's in front of me, and I do my best, and I carry the message, and I know that God's in charge, and stuff like that. But I see that like grace is either there or it's not there. Willingness is either there or it's not there. I cannot give them that willingness. I cannot control them. I cannot like shield them away, you know? I want to get them independent of me.
dependent on God, dependent on their gut, dependent on the depth of their being, dependent on the truth that's within them. I remember just learning how to, I'd call my sponsor and ask a question, and she would be like, "What do you think?" And, you know, like, I got to a place where, like, you know, I just call up, you know, it's like 1-800, you know, quick answer, you know, how to proceed. And she would, like, "What do you think?" And I remember one day when she asked me, if one of the your sponsees, one of the women you work with, came to you with this question, what would you tell them? She really pointed to the depth, the truth that's within me. She pointed for me to go to God, to be willing to tell the truth, you know, to what do I know that I don't want to know? What do I know that I don't want to look at or see? What has my gut said in the beginning that I have rationalized or justified? Right? This is all part of this awakening. This is waking up, man. This is serious business, by the way. Yeah, this is all part of, like, what's possible, you know? And then also, like, having those experiences, but then staying humble to be accountable to others. And to still share, and to call myself on staff, and to, do you know what I mean? I went on a spiritual meeting with three women. Each of them had like 25 to 30 years sober, well-known AA women in this area. I was with them on Saturday morning, and I bawled like a little kid who had 5 days sober for like 45 minutes, you know, sharing, you know, the current stuff. Like, here's my accountability. This is how my week's been. You know, help me. I don't know. Like, you know, I don't know what this means, you know? You know? You can, okay, I said that. Remember, they're very ill. Life will take on a new meaning. New meaning is a meaning I've never, when it says new in the book, like new freedom and a new happiness, it's one I haven't experienced before. Not the one I have in my head or what it's going to look like. It's new. A new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish. To see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. There's a must in the book. I shouldn't want to miss it. You know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. Experience of loneliness that only an alcoholic knows. This like disconnect, this like, I like the bedevilments, like the hideous four horsemen that the book talks about, like terror, bewilderment, despair, frustration, fear, whatever. These were my roommates, right? This, I remember like not being able to connect to another human being. I remember not being able to pick up the mail from my mailbox. I lived alone in New York City apartment building. You know, it's like in New York City, everybody's a stranger, like on the avenue. And I was afraid to walk out of my fourth floor apartment, get in the elevator, go down the stairs, unlock a mailbox, take the mail out, and bring it back up. That kind of loneliness, that kind of like terrorized by fear, kind of inability to connect to people. And then, like, you know, I pretended a lot in my life, and I wanted your approval, and I do really want you to like me, and I would like to sound good, look good, smell good, all that, you know, leave an impression. I would like your pat on my back and some praise, because I gathered my sense of self a lot from how you saw me. Do you know what I mean? So there was a lot of pretending, right? And manipulating relationships in that sense, and not really even knowing what it's like to like show up honestly and trust who's in front of me and who ends up in my life. I pick none of my friends. I have so many friends. Best deep friendships. I mean, these are not elevator talks with these women. These women like are like, do you know what I mean? Like, anything is on the table, like there's no pretense, right? Like there's just like, there's incredible amount of trust and respect. If I don't see from you for 3 months, no big deal. When I see you, we're like, you know, best friends forever. You know, it's just like, I have this group that, like we but our values are the same. We have tasted this, the juice that's available, right? The Spirit of God, right? And so there's no agenda in the friendship. It's like being together and wanting the best for each other is what's there. And then sharing with each other honestly and coming to each other non-judgmentally and doing check-ins with each other. It just all happens naturally. And those are all byproducts again. Right? When I was trying to have friends, that looked different. You know what I mean? So it's so like opposite everything with this thing.
Perhaps you're not acquainted with any drinkers who want to recover. Not true for us anymore. You can easily find some by asking a few doctors, ministers, priests, or husbands. They will be only too glad to assist you. Don't start out as an evangelist or reformist. I was a big book Nazi. It was awful. You know, I went through all those stages, you know, the pride and like, I know more than you. And then, you know, what do you mean, put the plug in the jug? I'm plugless, you know. I had all the slogans, you know, and the ego loved this. It like marinated in this. I was better than others. And I've been to 300 big book workshops and, you know, all the way to California, you know. I look back and I'm like, what a great stroke of humility to have received, you know, the knowledge, the experience, the opportunity, and to see, oh, that's not it. That's not it. I have seen and heard more wisdom from people with 1 month sober than 25 years sober. I have seen someone be more effective not saying a word than somebody shoving this big book down somebody's throat. This is why I say I'm the message. God will do the rest. I need to do the work on me. God will do the rest. I do the work on me. I make myself available. Life does everything else. Everything else is done. I do the work on me. I make myself available. I'm the only fish I need to catch. I need to keep the eyes on me. I do believe in the work passionately. I love the big book. This is my message. I will stand for that. I've seen too much. I work in a sober house. I've buried too many. I've heard it all 300 times over. Every excuse, every reason, you know. Every single person that sat in my office and said, I'll never drink. When they put their jobs and their money and their relationships ahead of their recovery, they all drank. Many of them are not around anymore. I've buried people who had 25 years sober, picked up a drink and couldn't stay sober for 5 years and thought that they could do what they did 25 years ago to stay dry. So I've seen too much, but it's not my job to, nor should I play that role, to shove it down your throat, because it's not effective. And so my job is, my question for me is it effective? Is it effective? Is my gauge? Am I attractive? Do they hear me? Does all of that need to be said, or they can have the experience themselves? Yeah. This is how we also check ourselves while we're doing this work. Unfortunately, a lot of prejudice exists. You will be handicapped if you arouse it. Ministers and doctors are competent, and you can learn much from them if you wish. But it happens that because of your own drinking experience, you can be uniquely useful to other alcoholics. So, here's some conditions. Cooperate, never criticize. To be helpful is our only aim. It says that again. That can be a prayer. I just want to be helpful. Somebody calls me for something, I might even say, I can't take on more, or this is my schedule right now, it would do you no justice, I can connect you to somebody, but I just want to be helpful, call me anytime. Shoot me a text. Maybe we can talk after 5 on certain days. You know, here's my home group, you know, come by. Do you know what I mean? I want to be helpful, even when I can't traditionally be helpful. And then it says, you know, what happens during the first visit. I just wanted to share a little bit of this. See a man alone
at first engage in general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit, but say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. If he is in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades, get him to tell some of his. When he sees you know all about the drinking game, that's that bond of identification I need to create. The greatest compliment I ever got, because I work in a sober house, and there's a lot of us, and sometimes new people come in, and maybe they're not, you know, chatting with me as much or whatever. And then at some point, they're like, you're an alcoholic? And, you know, like, and I'm like, yeah, you know, I mean, yes, that, you know, they don't think that I am. I mean, I was like slobbering, you know, on the floor, pissing my pants drunk with seizures at 27. And it's like, they can't even imagine. I mean, talk about like what's possible, right? This is the pregnant with possibilities world of Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah. Commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how you baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. All of my efforts to stop, it's really important that we bond in the suffering that they're going through, because they're still relying on self. They're still relying on self-knowledge. I know better now. I know what to do differently. They're still blaming outside circumstances for their what's happening to them. Show him the mental twist, which leads to the first drink of a spree. We suggest you do this as we have done it in the chapter on alcoholism. If he's an alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. If you are satisfied he's an alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Then really give it to him. Like, you're screwed, by the way. Because you're just like me, so here's the deal, you know, like, but you gotta be like really convinced that like this person, and like the more desperate they are, that's super awesome. Early, like, you know, just got out of detox, like, you know, don't know where left or right is, you know, like just completely, you know, wife wants a divorce, you know, like typhus is in their life, you know, just got arrested. The more the merrier. Bring it on. I want you in pain. I want you desperate. I want the consequences in your life. I really don't. But I know that for the willingness to be present, some of this stuff is super crucial for us, because we need to be broken down, man. Because why the hell would I accept this radical program of action? This is way too radical. Page 20 tells me my life depends on me thinking of you. Who even talks like that? We don't think like that. A newcomer doesn't think like that. This is page 20. It's a turnoff. You know, but when they have no place to go, and they're dying, and everything's been taken away, and everything has failed that I have tried, that's my in to introduce this and to be an example of that and to tell them it's okay. I know, it's just, it sounds crazy. I know. It's totally insane. But let's read some more, you know. How about we meet tomorrow again? You want to come to this meeting? I know, they sit in silence for like 5 minutes. But, you know, just try, you know. You know, I remember when my sponsor told me to sit silently for 2 minutes. I was cheating in 30 seconds. 30 seconds I couldn't sit with myself. And I was afraid to tell her. But I did tell her, because she created a safe space for me to just be like, okay with it. And she didn't judge me for it. Show him from your own experience how the queer mental condition surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't at this stage refer to this book unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusion. Most important thing. Such an important thing. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him that possibly he can if he's not too alcoholic, if he didn't go too far down the scale. you know, no matter how far down the scale we have gone, that sentence. But insist that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself. And I tell that to a lot of people. I work in the field, so I do get paid for that. I don't sponsor these people, and as I shouldn't. And but I have them sit in my office with all the reasons why they, you know, don't need to do 12 steps and things like that. And I say, well, if you're an alcoholic like me, you're in a lot of trouble. So, you know, or something along those lines. So I share my truth while I let them have their experience. Because I do clearly understand that they're in God's hands. And it's not my job to try to convince someone who's not ready or not there, or to give them a bad vibe about walking into AA when they are ready. Because I've seen too many of those. I've seen too many of them that had it shoved down their throat when they weren't willing to hear it, and they didn't think that they were an alcoholic, which created a lot of confusion and a lot of resentment. And I get it, you know, when we're really broken, none of that matters, and we walk in anyway, and God takes care of that. But it's giving me some direction, and I need to, like, pay attention to how I'm moving. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. A fatal malady. Life and death. Illness. Talk about the conditions of body and mind which accompany it. Keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. Doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it will serve some good purpose. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. So I'm not like reliving this hopelessness with you without having to say, hey, I got something here that I got to experience and I can share that with you. There's a way out. Here's my hand. Let's walk this journey together. It's not as scary as it may seem because it's so unknown and we're afraid of the unknown. I'm the example. I will walk by your side. We will do this together. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, of the traits of the alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell him that he's an alcoholic, so much the better. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he has become very curious to know how you got well. That's where I want them. I want them curious. I was curious. I didn't like you guys, and I really thought you were, like, weird. And the 12 steps were weird. And, you know, the God stuff was weird. And holding hands after the meeting was weird. And I didn't understand the lingo. I didn't have recovery lingo. I didn't talk like that. I didn't, like, I couldn't, like, reference it with anything. And, but I was curious. I was curious. There were some members that were pretty light. And they were kind of fun. And they were funny. And they seemed like they had their stuff together. And they were attractive, you know. And like I said, my sponsor was the biggest example of that, the way she carried herself. So she transmitted the message of availability. She transmitted the message of hope without saying a word when I met her. And, you know, it's so funny. It's a spiritual journey. I mean, this is about spirituality. It's about God. It's about the unseen. So, like, who am I to say that message is not getting transmitted without words? Messages are always getting transmitted without words. It's an incredibly powerful way to transmit a message. I mean, Abby transmits an incredibly powerful message to Bill Wilson while Bill Wilson is drinking at his kitchen table, offering Abby the drink. Abby doesn't flinch. He's free. Bill thinks Abby was a bigger drunk than him, a worse alcoholic than him. Abby does no preaching. Abby does no preaching. He doesn't shove religion down his throat. He's honest. He's honest. He's available. And there was something about his eyes. They were inexplicably different. His roots grasped a new soil, something like that, right? That's what sparked the curiosity. Even though Bill's mind snaps shut at the word religion, closes like, oh no, too much prejudice there. You're a lunatic, dude, right? But he's curious. He can't deny that this guy is not only sober, appears different, but is not drinking the booze in front of him. So how can I not be free when booze is in front of me? What do you mean avoid people, places, and things if that's available? How do I avoid a bar? How do I avoid my own resident who's drunk on vodka? I mean, I gotta get him out of the house. This is what I do. I work in sober living. People relapse. You know, can you imagine if I'm like, there's vodka in there, guys. We can't go in there. You know? I mean, we're not doing a very good job. Yeah. Trying to keep the community safe and get him the help that he needs. No judgment, I get it. You know? No judgment. I mean, you're here for the very illness, for that very illness, you know? I get it. You know? The best part is when, like, old-timers judge newcomers for relapsing. I can't believe you drank. Well, what do you mean? I'm, like, meant to drink. I'm going to drink. This is what I do. I drink until I'm tapped into the solution. How can anyone? I was the girl that was drunk in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous in New York City. That was me. That was me. I had whiskey in my Snapple bottle and I thought nobody knew. I reeked like booze. Reeked cocaine in one pocket, pot in another pocket, whiskey in the Snapple bottle, you know, coat, you know, totally dirty, you know, hair matted, so I put it in a bun, you know, didn't sleep for 3 days, pale, you know. Nobody blinked. Nobody threw me out. Nobody took away my seat. What other place can be safer for people like that? It left an impression. That meeting carried a message I didn't even realize for another couple of years until the memory came back. I ran. As soon as they said God, I was like, I'm out of here. I don't know what the weirdos, you know. I'm just going to read this paragraph, and I'm sorry, there's so much juice here. I recommend you read it. He becomes curious to know how you got well. Let him ask you that question, if you will. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. Not your Jesus, not your Buddha, not your higher power. Whatever relaxes their mind and drops it. Whatever relaxes their mind. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing, and this is in italics, is that he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself and that he live by spiritual principles. And I say this off the bat. I tell them, there's going to be prayer and meditation. I'm going to ask you to do these things. And this is what the book asks us to do. And this is what sponsorship looks like. When I meet them, I tell them who I am. I tell them my story. I tell them what I have done. I tell them what it means for me to be of service. You know, I don't sponsor you. Sponsorship happens. Thursday, 5:30 p.m., 2 hours. We meet until we're done with the work. That's our night. We don't have to confirm, ever. It's like from this Thursday going forward at 5:30, we're together. Bring a book. Bring a pen. We're going to read from the beginning. As we read, we're going to take the suggestions. We're going to do the work. You stop me. Ask questions. I'll explain what it means. I'll explain my experience. You just need to be willing. The only job for a sponsee is to be willing. You just keep showing up. Call me anytime. Text me anytime. Get a home group. Get maybe a literature-based home group. Get to know this work. Start praying. Let's talk about that. And then let's see what happens. And we meet like that until we're done with the book. If there isn't a willingness, I still love them and I still meet with them. If they don't want to make some amends, that's okay. If they're having a hard time with God, that's okay. With prayer, that's okay. With meditation, that's okay. If I told them to do certain things and they didn't do them, that's okay. Because I know that the willingness is not there. Or maybe enough pain wasn't there. Or maybe it's not their time to have that experience. I do feel good that I've told them the truth and I shared with them what needs to happen and what I've done. I warned them if they're not willing to make that happen, I don't know what it's going to look like for them. And God takes care of the rest. You know, the ones that are not willing or not there or need to have a different experience, they just kind of naturally fizzle out. And some, like, no matter what I say, have these incredible experiences and, like, have five women ask them to sponsor them and their lives blossom. And, like, you know what I mean? And some, like, their recovery might not look like mine, but their sincerity was present and it was their time. And they're holding, like, that service spirit in one way or another, right? It just, like, all kind of comes in. Like, it just happens naturally. I don't need to do anything. I just need to make myself available. I don't get to call the shots. I don't know what they need. This is all I can offer. And I can offer it with assurance. I'm like absolutely confident in this because I've had the experience myself. That's what I can offer them. My own experience. Right? And I wanted to say something really awesome, but now it left. You know when you have that moment when you're like finishing a sentence? And now it's gone. It was really good, by the way. But only I know about it. I'm the only one who knows about it. Oh, yeah. It came back. This is what was good. This is the only part in the book that it tells me to talk about my drinking. Freely. To talk about my war stories and my drunk logs and the efforts to stop. It's the only place in the book that it tells me that. It's to identify with a new guy. It's to let them identify. I'm speaking their language because they can't speak mine yet. I'm letting them know I'm one of them. I mean, creating the bond of identification in that sense so that I'm not too much of a weird, spiritual, floaty Buddha out there, you know, who's unapproachable and doesn't understand them and their lust and greed and fears and agonies and resentments and anger with the world and the things that have happened to them. And that's the bond I'm trying to create. And this is, by the way, maybe it was meant to be just like this, and I'm just going to leave it. This is just the first visit. This is page 93. There's pages of directions and spiritual principles to live by and how to approach them the second time and how to work with the family and how to share with them this message and about the freedom that's available, about all the places we can go and what we can do and not to shield them from temptation and not to control their lives and to make sure that, you know, because we as alcoholics, we can be very controlling, you know. I want to control the world around me. And then they can sometimes translate in recovery, like I want to control my sponsees and what they do and how they do because I think that they're a reflection of me. My sponsees are not a reflection of me. Like, they're not a reflection of me. Which is why I don't care how many times she relapses, and I don't care whether it looks like my journey or not. Like, it's like God's journey for them. I just want to share it with them, and I want to be a safe space for them to come to. And I had no idea about any of this, by the way, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. So that's pretty good. So everything I have is as a result of making myself available for this, and half the time I don't want to do it. Ego comes back, I'm tired, you know, I want to do things for myself, I feel like I do a lot, and I've had experiences with that, and integrity leads the way of that. If I give my word, I trust that. So it's kind of like this basics of, like, you know, do the right thing, you know, just do, you know, be accountable. So that doesn't mean that I want to and I'm like all gung-ho about it, but I'm willing to do it because I value my word that I gave. I value the word that I gave. And I also still to this day don't trust myself. I don't trust myself and my perception of things. And I trust the reality that put somebody in front of me. There were times that I was doing so much service that personal life was suffering. So I saw also being a hero or a martyr in that, how ego can hijack that and how we can, like, pretend like I'm doing all this and, like, just almost like it was almost like some weird sort of self-loading where I wasn't like taking care of the people in my life, and I was like, so there was a lot of lessons, and the lessons keep coming, right? If I have the eyes or the willingness to see them. So there's no like magic formula except to come to show up in the most honest way with the experience that I've had, with a sincere desire to be helpful. And with that, just thanks for having me one more night here.